Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my mother and co-host, Caroline Kilborn.
Yes, well, it's a beautiful day out, so I hope everybody's having a good day today.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Yeah, right.
Which actually is very fitting that I'm singing from Mr. Rogers because of who we're talking to today and what we're going to be talking about.
That's right.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Our guest today is Marie Unaname, and she is the author of The Adventures of Fatty and Piazzo, Central Park. This is a new children's book series. Marie has always been an avid reader and an activist for children who are bullied. And as a kindness advocate, she hopes to inspire children across the world to remember to always treat each other with kindness and compassion, which is certainly something that Mr. Rogers did as well. The former anchor of Travels with Marie, a weekly travel review program, Marie Marie Unaname is also the former vice president of sales and marketing of honeymoons.com and former owner of Beyond Compare Events, an event planning, marketing, and PR firm. And she sits on several boards. She's extremely active in her community. And you can check out more about Marie at letsallbekind.com. Welcome to Writers' Voices, Marie.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me, and an even bigger thanks for comparing me to somebody that I've always loved, Mr. Rogers, so that's a huge compliment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he really was something, wasn't he? You know, when
remarkable.
Other...
And
Yeah. Yeah, my kids watched him when they were little, and there was just something so calming and soothing about him, and yet he would hold the kids' interest.
Well, he was a very gentle man, that's, you know, and that his voice was just soothing. That was part of his, you know, persona.
That's true. So Marie, tell us.
I don't know what was more soothing, his voice or the sweater. He would take that sweater
or the slippers.
Yeah. Right.
So Marie, tell us how you became an advocate for kindness and involved in anti-bullying.
So, you know, when I was a young girl, my mother was a huge component of spreading kindness, teaching me to be kind. So anytime I was bullied as a child, I would come home and tell my mom, oh, you know, this happened at school and, you know, it was terrible. And she'd say, well, I don't care what they did. You want to treat others the way you want to be treated. So from a young age, my mother was always saying, I don't care. You just have to stay kind. Be kind. Don't change who you are because somebody doesn't know how to act or treat you. Show them. Teach them. So as I got older and watching with my nieces and nephews and getting involved in so many great charities that involve kids, I felt like, you know, this was such a great lesson that my mom taught me. And I thought, you know, this would be something that kids today, especially now more than ever with social media, have the ability to also learn and have the same wonderful inspiration as my mom. So I really owe it all to her that I'm doing this because it's really how she raised me.
Well, she was certainly a wonderful, wonderful teacher because, you know, a lot of parents, when their kids are bullied, they get mad too, and then they want to strike back, you know, strike out too. So that was, you had a great teacher there.
She was ahead of her time for sure. And that is a great point that you bring up because it is, I find it so funny that a lot of parents' first reaction is to either hit back or fight back or, you know, instead of taking the high road, which to me, you know, you're always the bigger person when you take the high road. And it's shocking that more parents aren't teaching kids to do that.
Yeah. You know, I read something about if you see something see someone bullied, if you can, go over to them and start to talk to the person who's being bullied and, you know, make the people who are bullying realize that, yes, they do have a friend, and maybe that will calm everybody down. I don't know. I've never had the opportunity to do it, but I hope I do someday to try that.
And that that exact statement has been in any of the interviews that I've done that talks to parents about how to handle a bully or how kids should handle a bully. Stopbullying.gov, that's the recommendation that they give, that if you see someone being bullied, the best thing you could do is go over to them, start talking, start making them laugh, embrace them, show the bully there's power in numbers, and that they're not alone, because that's the best thing you could do for somebody that's so down and being picked on, is to embrace them and build them back up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it makes sense. I mean, it's just common sense, but, you know, sometimes we don't think about common sense so much.
Like as a child, I remember, you know, feeling bad if somebody was being picked on, but feeling afraid to side with them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Although sometimes I was able to, but feeling afraid to side with them because then I'd get picked on.
Yeah.
And that's a very normal reaction from all the interviews I've done with children, is that's their biggest fear, is that they're going to all of a sudden jump into that bully's spotlight.
Yeah. Yeah. And for some reason, it's so important to kids to be popular, and it can be so heartbreaking to be an outsider. But when you're older, you realize that if the outsiders would just all get together, they'd be way more popular than the popular kids.
I know. Absolutely. Ironic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. And I very ironic.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I hope that kids realize that you do reach a point where being popular doesn't matter at all. And that the kids who are popular in school don't necessarily have the best lives going forward. And a lot of times it's, you know, I mean, look at Bill Gates, the, you know, ultimate nerd. And he, you know, outshone probably everybody that he knew when he was a kid.
Absolutely. That's a great example.
Yeah. Yep. So what inspired you to write this book?
So in real life, I have a cat, named Fatty. He is a 30-pound tabby and struggles with his weight. And he has a brother, Clyde. As we all do, right? And then in real life, it's a funny story that the cat that lives next door, his name is Payaso, they live in Seattle when they're not living in New York. And whenever Payaso would come to town, no matter how much time fell in between visits, he would get out of his carrier, walk to the back door, and wait for someone to let him out, and he'd come sit at our door until I let him in. And this went on for 13 years of this friendship between these two cats. And cats are normally solitary animals. They sleep during the day. And Fatty would wait at the door. He would sit outside our door and just wait. He would know. He knew the seasons. Payaso would visit in the fall for a few months and the spring. And every September, Fatty would start sitting in the hall waiting for his friend to return. And they were inseparable for the entire time they were in town. And one night I said to my girlfriend, you know, these cats have such a story of friendship. It's remarkable, because here Fatty was this overweight tabby who, you know, was a shelter rescue and definitely not exotic at all. And here Payaso was this purebred who walks with such, he just enters a room with such confidence, and he's well groomed and he's exotic. And here they were best friends. It didn't matter how different they were. It didn't matter to Payaso how overweight Fatty was. And they would just hang out together. And the funny thing was, Clyde, in real life, could not stand, or still can't stand, Payaso. So he would come into the room, and you could see the disgust on Clyde's face, as if to say, oh, he's back. And it was so funny. I actually felt a little bit crazy, because I was writing from home, writing about weddings, and my husband would come home from work, and I'd say, you wouldn't believe what went on today. Fatty, you know, Payaso came over, and this happened, and that happened, and then Payaso used a litter box, and Clyde went crazy. And I started to sound like this crazy cat lady. And then in the end, I thought, wow, you know, Purina even talked about, somebody in marketing thought, what a great commercial this would make. We should make it that Payaso's coming over for the food, and we left, but I said, you know, it's not. He's coming for the friendship. He's coming for this unbelievable companionship that no matter time or distance can deter. And I thought, this is a story that needs to be told. And then I just got this inspiration watching them, and I thought, you know, I think this should be about, and Fatty in real life was bullied every day by the birds on the terrace. They would chase him inside. And I thought, you know, maybe this could be a story about kindness and that, you know, being different doesn't mean you're any less special than the next person. And that being different doesn't mean you can't have a best friend. And I, you know, that from that evolved into this story that I hope touches kids that are struggling with bullies, that want a story about adventure, or just kids that want to have a laugh, because I think that what they do is pretty funny.
Yes, it is. And I want to point out that Fatty is spelled P-H-A-T-T-Y.
Yeah. I want to say, yeah. I think this is a book that should be read by parents with children. Read it to them, with them. I mean, it's just one of those books that is so much to learn from, and it could be a real treasure for the parents and the children both.
Thank you so much. That means so much. And I have to tell you that putting myself out there to write the book was very hard for me. But the best feeling I've had, second to, you know, meeting some of the kids and having them tell me, was having the parents say, "Great, opened up. I read the first chapter with my son. We left. We loved it. They went to bed and I finished the book." And it was so cute that the parents were like, "I had to see what happened. I loved it. I didn't write it every night for..." You know, so it was so great that I could capture and give the parents something that they enjoyed as well. And it just made me feel fantastic. I have to tell you, it just was such a confidence builder, because I had no idea what that writing and putting yourself out there to read these thoughts would be so hard. I mean, like I said, I felt a little bit crazy. I was making my cats essentially have a voice and talking. Does it get crazier than that?
And the dog could understand the cats, and the
birds could understand the cats.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Now, do you also have a dog, or was that something you added in?
Stanley is as real as they come, and my husband and I, we have 16 nieces and nephews that we love dearly, and Stanley is our child, our fur child, and he is as adored as they come, and he is the same personality that he is in the book, and he works at hospitals and sits with children, and he's just such a gift from God, because he brings such joy to anyone that meets him. He's so friendly and funny, so he had to be, and he's a little bit mad that he's not on the cover, so that's... My husband always jokes and says, you know, the next book has to be Stanley, The Adventures of Stanley, Fatty and Fiasco.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, I want to ask you about the illustrations, because they are interesting and different than any I've ever seen. Who did those?
So it was done by a man named Edgardo Miranda Rodriguez. And I'm so proud of Edgardo, because he just came up with his own superhero. He works at Marvel and then went on his own. And right before Hurricane Maria, he had come up with a superhero called La Borinquena. And it's a superhero that cares about the environment. And it is a female superhero that happens to be Puerto Rican. And it is doing so fantastic. And I'm so proud of him, because the message is fantastic. And it's just been a joy to work with him. And he's just so gifted. The fact that I was able to give him pictures of the animals, and he was able to, I mean, Payaso, Fatty, and Clyde, they look identical to the photos. And even Racky the raccoon, that was a fictional character. And he somehow was able to capture such a sweetness in this raccoon.
I got so tickled.
How did you find your illustrator?
So I was really lucky by, you know, a lot of friends in television and media. And I started asking around, and he was referred to me by someone that had worked with him before at one of the major networks. So I was excited. I was also excited, since the main character of the book is Hispanic. Payaso is the Hispanic character. And I really felt that it was important to the book to have an Hispanic illustrator, because I really think to have anything in the Hispanic community is just wonderful.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Marie Unanaway, author of The Adventures of Fatty and Pavasso, Central Park. So, Marie...
Go ahead,
Mom.
Oh, I was going to say, the interesting thing is that they can all... that the cats, of course, can understand each other, but the dog can understand the cats. And Max can understand them, and the raccoon can understand them, and, the turtle can understand the cat. I mean, it's just... And you suppose that's really true? I mean, it could be, you know. Could be.
You know, it could be. I always wonder. And, you know, I have found that I've had a lot of interaction with children that are on the spectrum. And unfortunately, children that have trouble communicating, you know, they find very, very different ways to express their emotions. And I just thought, wow, you know, when you see an autistic child with a pet, the pet is so soothing to them. It's like the pet and the dog or the cat understand. And I just really wanted to have that connection. And that's why I decided to go with somebody on the spectrum for Max. So it is a little bit of fantasy there that they're all talking. But I thought, you know, it's a children's book. Let's just go a little bit crazy and have everybody think out of the comfort zone. And, you know, when I came up with the story, it didn't dawn on me till after publishing that my last name is so hard as it is. And my maiden name was O'Mara, which was way easier than Unanaway. And then I chose, you know, Fatty has such a different spelling of the name, and then Piasso. So I'm hitting people with an impossible last name, impossible character names. It'll be a miracle if anybody finds the book.
Oh, I don't think it'll be too hard. Let's talk a little bit about Max, who's really the only human character in the book. That's other than, you know, a few people that we see very briefly or don't see at all, but get like the animals' moms. By the way, they talk about their moms a lot more than their dads.
I know. You could tell I wrote the book. So, yeah, you know, they're like my babies. I couldn't help it. I didn't realize it till after that I really did. Make it all about them talking about me. I did feel a little bit bad, but I guess it was unconscious. I didn't realize it.
Anyway, Max, as you said, is a young boy who is bullied himself. He's on the spectrum, the autistic spectrum. Is there someone in, like, a particular child that you patterned Max after?
So I did not. I had spoken with several experts on autism, you know, people that work with children every day that have autism, and also parents of children that have autism, because I wanted the character to feel realistic. I wanted to make sure that what I was describing was definitely correct and, you know, a pattern that children could identify with, because my thoughts were so many children go to school with kids that have disabilities and special needs. That, you know, whether they're hearing impaired or physically impaired or vision impaired, you know, there's children in the classroom that have special needs. And I wanted to come up with a character that kids could read and say, you know, wow, you know, I never thought that I, you know, should work harder to include the child that's struggling to fit in, or the child that has special needs to fit in. I never thought that I should invite them to join me on the playground. And I wanted it to be a character that kids could not only relate with, but, you know, learn from, that they could take these skills back to the classroom and make sure that they worked harder to make sure they include anyone who's having a hard time fitting in.
Now, one of the things Max gets teased about is his red hair. Do you think kids really tease redheads?
I think, I don't know, rephrase that. I know 100% without a doubt they do. And they get called things like ginger, flaming head, fire face. I mean, the teachers that have shared with me what the red haired children go through at school, and it's unbelievable the things that people say and the creativity that of the horrible things that these kids come up with to call somebody with red hair. And if you watch any interview with somebody who has red hair that's famous, and they share what their childhood was like, they've been called ginger for as far back as they can remember.
Well, Well, I never. So that was another reason why I chose that. Ginger was an insult, or you know, I thought it was just a description. I guess that's how you know. It's like being called blondie or something.
Yeah, you know, I guess, and I guess there's also that blondes could feel like sometimes when they're called out for being blonde, because it has that connotation that blonde, you know, she was a blonde, meaning not intelligent or, you know, so I guess any nickname could have some kind of negative connotation. But Ginger, from everything I've heard and teachers, when somebody says, oh, he was a ginger, or, well, ginger need love too, you know, it just seems like it's never said of in an endearing way, like, oh, the ginger-haired boy, you know, it's never said in a loving way. And well, that's one of the reasons why I chose that.
And the funny thing is that Ginger isn't even red.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I don't understand how that, you know. Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, I guess even look at Carrot Top. I mean, Carrot Top really, it's orange. His hair is red. So yeah. It's like they can't come up with something truly red to name the kid after. So Ginger has really, unfortunately, is sticking.
Wow. Okay, well, I will be more conscientious about that. I don't think I've ever said called someone ginger to their face, but I know that I've referred to, oh, they're a ginger, and not just thinking it's just another word for a redhead, and not realizing that it had a negative connotation. So
and
now,
you know,
now I know.
To be fair, there could be redheads that love it. They could love being called the ginger, you know, for, you know, but I'm only going by what the teachers have shared with me that, you know, when they have a red-haired student in the classroom, they definitely, it is definitely something they get picked on. And for some kids, they may not mind it, but I guess some kids do.
And you have to be, you have to respect their feelings about it. And in other words,
absolutely,
too, and Mom and I have talked about this before, you know, she grew up where calling Asian people Oriental was just, it wasn't considered an insult. It was just, oh, they're from the Orient. You know, it's like calling someone European or calling somebody American. But it has developed a negative connotation where now it's hurtful to people to be called that.
Yes. That's a perfect example.
Yeah. And so you have to respect their feelings about it, even if you don't know the history of the word, to know why it's not considered a neutral term anymore.
Can you explain that? Why isn't it? Why is it considered not acceptable anymore?
From what I learned, and it's funny, my husband and I just had this conversation last summer. A friend of ours who happens to be Korean had explained to my husband that, and like an Oriental rug, Oriental food, it's referred to items or Oriental. People are not. So he had explained that's where the foot comes in. You could still, because my husband said, why could I still say Oriental rug? It sounds like a crazy question, but he was just curious, you know. And our friend had explained, oh, you know, because it's a thing. It's a, you know, it's a,
okay,
you know, not a
okay
human being. So
yeah, that makes sense. And I had never thought of it that way, but that makes perfect sense. Okay, thank you.
So the Adventures of Fatty and Payaso is set in a city apartment overlooking Central Park, which seems like a really cool place to live. Have you lived there, or why did you choose this?
So that is where we live. We live on Central Park, and we do have a terrace, and the animals spend, especially during the fall and the spring, all day out on the terrace, just watching everything going on in the park, around the park. It's amazing. They're just fascinated. They just stare at, even the dog, they just sit out there watching everything going on. And a few years ago, when I was writing the story, there was hawks. Our apartment building made the newspaper because hawks were nesting in the air conditioning units on the building. And there was a bunch of people that were trying to have the hawks removed. And then there was people that were fighting to say, no, the hawks were here first. I mean, they're coming from the park. Let them nest. It's, you know, a few months of the year and just, you know, get used to it. Just, you know, so that's what gave me the idea to do the hawk, because I remember sitting out there with the cat thinking, gee, can these hawks pick up one of the cats? But thank goodness I have the world's biggest cats in the world. So, you know, really wasn't a fear.
Actually, Stanley looks like he might be a little smaller than the cats.
Yeah, Stanley's only 8 pounds, so he definitely is not allowed out there alone because the hawks can pick him up.
Yeah.
But God bless any hawk that could pick up a 28-pound cat.
Well, you know, down in Austin where I live part-time because that's where my grandkids are, there's wild parrots. And I'm not quite sure how they got there, but the first time I went for a walk down by the river and I saw this whole tree full of green parrots. And I was so amazed. And everybody else was just sort of walking by them and not really paying any attention. And I'm just standing there taking pictures and like really geeking out over these parrots. But I found out that they've been there quite a while and they're considered a nuisance. They started nesting in my condo building and people wanted to get rid of them. And I'm not there enough to know exactly what we ended up with, but I was like, don't hurt the parrots.
Yeah. That was me with the hawks. I didn't want to see anybody hurt them, but I understand they can become a nuisance. But I know for me, the terrace gets covered in remnants of whatever animals they don't finish. And
oh, gross.
I know, it's terrible. And also, you know, you can imagine what comes out of a bird after they eat as much as they eat. So they're right above us. You know, I'm out there constantly hosing off the furniture.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be, I can see why people might not appreciate that. But,
exactly.
So the nemesis in the story is a hawk. But it's not just any hawk. How did you get the idea for Crawler's background and story?
Well, I'm a huge fan of the Central Park Zoo. I'm a fan of zoos to begin with. I think what they do to take in animals that have been hurt, or unfortunately people take an animal in that they shouldn't as a pet, and then the animal can't go back out into the wild. And when people realize that they have taken in a bear as a pet, and, you know, 3 months in, mistakes were made, that bear has to go somewhere. You know, it happens all the time. And I think zoos are amazing. And I wanted to have something that came from the zoo and something that we brought back to the zoo. So one, it made kids aware that if they didn't know there was a zoo in Central Park, at the end of the book, they did know, and it was a place they'd want to visit. And the bird collection they have over at Central Park is incredible. So that was where I started to kind of develop it. And I thought, okay, if this is going to be my villain, so to speak, I wanted him to have a background. I wanted there to be a reason why he bullied, because I truly believe, and from everything I've researched and heard about bullies, bullies bully because they feel bad about themselves. Bullies have something that they're trying to compensate for to make themselves feel better. And I wanted this to be a story that kids could understand. If the bully is picking on you, chances are if you turn around and try and befriend that bully or understand what's going on in their home life that is hurting them so bad that they're lashing out at others, that you might be able to help that bully, again, change. And going back to what my mom said, treat people the way you want to be treated. You might be able to teach a bully that this isn't the way that you want to interact in society. And I wanted Crawler to come full circle. I wanted him to be somebody that had a disformity. Again, he's struggling to fit in. He, you know, his appearance wasn't perfect, wasn't what the normal hawk would look like. And I wanted the kids to be rooting for him in the end. I wanted them to think, you know what? Wow, we have found out that Crawler has had a hard life. He has broken out of the zoo because he's having trouble making friends. And I wanted kids in the end to say, wow, we understand why he was so mean, how sad, and then watch the characters with such amazing qualities like kindness and forgiveness and compassion and empathy to not only forgive him, but to help him and get him back to where he could live a nice life. And I'm hoping in future books, Crawler makes another appearance. I just have to figure out how to get him out of the zoo again. But, you know, I have to figure that out. But I really wanted it to be you know, wanting to go to the zoo and rooting for the zoo.
Oh. Well, I know that my mother taught me when I was a child that that bullies are just are trying to compensate, that they're hurting in some way themselves. But it can be very difficult when you're being targeted by a bully to figure out a way to turn it around, to befriend mm-hmm. them. It's not easy.
Oh, absolutely. It's not easy. And I can remember time and time again with my mom, but mom, you don't understand. And she'd say, no, I do understand. It stinks. It's not nice what he's doing. And they had come up with this horrible nickname for me. They called me Hooters because at a young age, I had developed faster than the other girls. And, you know, in fourth and fifth grade, it was really hard. And my mother would say things like, well, trust me, in 10 years, those boys are going to be knocking at the door. And, you know, I didn't get it. I didn't get it at the time. It just felt so horrible and so hurtful to have this nickname following me around. And again, she'd come back to treat them the way you want to be treated. Because I'd say, well, I'm going to come up with a nickname for them. And she'd say, well, is that nice? Do you like, you know, why would you be, you know? So it was kind of a lesson. And I'm really hoping that bullies read this and get an understanding as well.
It should be, and
I'm really hoping
be on the reading list of books that have to be read by every elementary student and junior high.
Thank you very much. Means so much to me, and I really appreciate it.
Do you think that bullies are aware that they are bullies?
So that's a great question. And let me just start with, I don't think so, because the scary thing is their parents don't realize that they're the bully. So if you line up 200 parents, I would guarantee everybody will talk about how there's bullies, it's crazy. Not one of them will actually acknowledge that it's their child that is the bully.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I don't think the kids know that they're the problem, because I think everybody has their head in the sand at home about it.
Right, right. You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Marie Unanaway, author of The Adventures of Fatty and Payaso, Central Park. And this is the first in a series of books that are planned. How many do you think you'll write, and how far along are you on the next book?
So the next book has been written, and it's called Milagro. And Milagro means miracle in Spanish. So it's very exciting because Milagro is a female cat. So it's exciting for me to be able to bring in not only another character, but a really strong female character. So the book is about girl power and about Milagro kind of showing these other male characters a thing or two. And it's been written, and I'm really excited about it. And hopefully if The Adventures of Fatty and Payaso does well, then we'll go forward with Milagro.
Well, why don't you read a little bit from Fatty and Payaso?
Sure. I've decided I'm going to read from the first chapter because I feel starting anywhere else could have spoilers. And I was hoping that if people heard the first chapter, they might like it enough that they'll think, wow, we want to see what happens.
Right.
So, chapter one. Fatty was perched with his big belly balanced atop his favorite green chair. His fat, or as he called it, his splendid undercarriage, hung over the sides of the chair like excess dough that had been squished out of a baker's pan. Although it was certainly not the most flattering position for a cat of his size and stature, Fatty felt like a king. Fatty squinted up into the sunlight that warmed his entire body as a cool breeze blew through his whiskers. Breathing deeply, Fatty could smell the spring flowers. The strong odor of gardenias told him that spring was in full bloom in Central Park. Fatty loved to hear all about Central Park, and although he had never experienced it firsthand, he lived for every detail that others had shared with him. Normally, on a beautiful morning like this, Fatty would love nothing more than to watch the action in Central Park, but today he was having trouble just sitting still. On this day, after months of waiting, his best friend Payaso, the cat who lived across the hall for a few months each year, was finally coming back to town. Nothing could ruin my day, thought Fatty. He took a deep breath and purred loudly. Today is going to be fantabulous. Fatty smiled, impressed with himself and his own made-up word. Fantabulous, Fatty thought again, giggling. Wait until I tell Payaso this one. Fatty closed his eyes, still giggling at his own joke. Fatty took in the warm sun as he made a mental note to add this incident to the long list of things to tell Payaso. Crack, crack, crack. A sharp tapping on the window jolted Fatty's eyes open and immediately sent him into self-defense mode. Before Fatty could react, he noticed a large black shadow creeping across the floor and a paralyzing sight that left him stricken with fear. The shadow froze. What's wrong, kitty? You're not giggling anymore. What is it? Cat got your tongue? Fatty looked up. A dark, menacing hawk stood on the terrace and shrieked with enjoyment at his own joke. Fatty squealed. The hawk continued. Poor kitty. What is it? All of a sudden your joke is no longer funny? Too scared to look at the creature any longer, Fatty looked away. Hey, kitty, I'm over here, the hawk called out. Hello. It's rude to not look at someone when he's speaking to you. Don't you have any manners? Come on. Why don't you share that joke with me? Asked the hawk sarcastically. Fatty didn't move or answer. He just quivered in his chubby frame. Tisk, tisk, tisk. Okay, well, suit yourself then. But I do have to tell you, I find it so sad you sitting there all alone laughing at your own joke. So pitiful. Fatty was now standing, but his legs wobbled out from under him as he tried to take a step. Don't move on my account, fat cat, said the hawk. That is your name, correct? Fatty the cat? You could tell so much by a name, don't you agree? Oh, yes. I know all about names from those loser animals over at the zoo. It's Fatty, spelled with a T-H, not an F, Fatty hollered. His own voice was so loud it not only surprised him, but also the hawk. Fatty took one awkward step as if testing out his own legs and then stopped. The hawk cackled and said, going to hide, are you? Don't hide on my account. I mean, come on. I can get you no matter where you hide, and I do prefer seeing you spread out on the floor like a doormat. Fatty was used to teasing. Small birds of the neighborhood often teamed up and picked on him when he was lounging on the terrace, chasing him inside. But today was different. Today, he was face to face with a big, ferocious hawk, one powerful enough to pick up Fatty and whisk him away. The hawk's talons sparkled in the sunlight and looked as sharp as razors. The hawk shrieked again, making Fatty jump. What's your name, flyboy? Asked Fatty, trying to muster up some bravado and make a joke. Venturing closer, Fatty took in every inch of the menacing bird. The creature's beak and left talon were a mangled mess, the most hideous-looking features Fatty had ever seen. What could have caused a beak to twist this way or a talon to look like a crushed grape? I'm Crawler, the hawk bellowed. For a second, Fatty's fear melted into pity as he imagined the horrible and painful event that caused Crawler's deformities. Fatty tilted his head with compassion and opened his mouth to ask the bird what had happened. Squawk! Screamed Crawler. The sound was so shrill and so horrendous that Fatty's paws scrambled faster than his mind, and he instinctively clawed himself across the floor to his hiding spot. Crawler sounded enraged now as he glared. Get a good look at me, doughboy, because in the next couple of days, you're going to be seeing a whole lot of me. By Wednesday night, I'm coming in for you and your family and your furry little friends. Terror washed over Fatty, leaving him trembling and weak. Not so brave and big now, are you, kitty? The hawk continued. Where's your brother, the puppy dog, to protect you? You don't think this little screen can stop me from getting in, do you? They couldn't keep me locked in at the Central Park Zoo, so what makes you think this thin screen could stop me? Bang, 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 Crawler slammed his beak and talons against the window screen. It sounded louder than the pounding of Fatty's heart. Halfway to his hiding spot, Fatty kicked it into high gear, unable to risk another second out in the open. His paws began to slide across the floor and go out from under him as he crossed across the hardwood floor. With one long, loud, deep breath and with all the courage he had left, Fatty dove full speed under the couch where he thought he could hide safely. Do you know what I'm going to do when I get you inside your house, Fatty? I think you do, don't you, Fatty? The hawk squawked as he pecked faster and faster. You won't be able to hide from me under the couch. I'm coming for you. I'm going to pick you apart, and when I'm done, I'm going to find your brothers and feed them piece by piece to the other birds. And after that, I will get what I came for your mother's jewels. Then, in that next instant, the pecking abruptly stopped. A moment of eerie silence followed. Fatty squeezed himself into a tight ball under the couch and held his breath, desperate to hear anything that indicated the hawk's next move. Despite the discomfort of the couch springs digging into his back, he remained frozen in place, listening, straining as hard as he could. He still heard nothing. Maybe the hawk had already broken the screen. Maybe he had already gotten inside. Fatty thought as his tears welled up in his eyes. Then, in a frantic attempt to hear anything, he took another deep breath and held it just as the flap of the couch was lifted. What are you doing now, fat boy? His brother Clyde asked as he stuck his head under the couch, exposing Fatty to sunlight. Oh! Fatty screamed. Clyde was so startled by the scream that he jumped back a foot, knocking off the figurine off the table and sending it crashing loudly to the floor. Eek! Clyde's front paws clapped down over his own mouth out of embarrassment at the shriek that had just escaped his own lips. For the love of catnip, Clyde finally growled from behind his paw. Normally a brave cat, he picked himself up and shook his startled head. What in heaven's name is going on, Fatty? You almost gave me a heart attack. Clyde glared at his clearly frightened brother. Fatty's sweet little eyes were squeezed shut, and he was shaking harder than Clyde had ever seen. Clyde's heart broke just at the sight of him. Fatty, I'm here. Calm down. What has you so upset? Obviously too scared to open his eyes or speak. Fatty mouthed the words silently. Look behind you. The hawk crawler is at the window. Clyde turned around and saw nothing but an open window and a torn screen. Clyde grew angry when he realized that Crawler the Hawk was to blame. Fatty, he's gone now. Please come out. No, Fatty mumbled. I promise he's gone, and I won't let him hurt him, Clyde said softly again, trying to keep his temper under control. He said he was going to hurt us, feed us to the birds, and Fatty was crying. He gasped as he said he was coming in to get us and Mom's jewels. Clyde reached in and placed his paw on Fatty. Please come out. I'm looking out the window, and he's definitely gone. Although Fatty and Clyde were brothers, Clyde was built nothing like Fatty. Clyde was tall, robust, broad shoulders, long legs, and an air of confidence. At a solid 24 pounds, he was a mixture of lean muscle and sturdy, solid bones. He was the kind of cat that no bird of any size would ever dare mess with. If there was one thing Clyde wouldn't take, it was someone bullying any of his brothers. Clyde surveyed the terrace and saw no sight of the mischievous flying pest. He could still hear Fatty's loud panting from deep under the sofa as he scanned for sight of the heinous bird. Clyde knew right then and there it would be his mission to ensure that this hawk would not terrorize his brother another second.
And that is The Adventures of Fatty and Pavasso. And Clyde. Yeah. And Stanley. And Max.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clyde is a pretty strong character in this. And
yes, he is.
That's great.
And I love how he evolves. I love how he sees Pajasso in a different, you know, he starts to understand Pajasso a little bit better and understand that as smart and as witty and charming as Pajasso is, he has his own insecurities. And I think that one of my favorite parts is when Clyde realizes that he's made a friend and he struggles making friends and that he's able to have empathy for Pajasso, a character that he's his nemesis.
Well, he's probably a little bit envious of that friendship between Fatty and Pajasso too, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And growing up, I have a sister, and I was always jealous if she had a really good friend. But I'd always feel like, well, why isn't she my best friend? I'm her sister.
You know, you wrote this book to combat bullying and promote kindness, but are there other character traits in children that you're trying to encourage?
Yes. So when I had come up with the idea to write this funny story about the cats, I never imagined that it would turn into what it has. And it only did that because my girlfriend, the Pajasso's mother, had said to me, you know, there's a wonderful charity called characterlab.org, and they have researched children for years, and they have come up with the character skills that are missing in today's kids that would be great if you could incorporate these character skills into the characters, you know, show strengths, weaknesses, so that kids could understand and learn from the characters and understand these skills because they're struggling with ways to get kids to understand them. So I studied the skills, and then when I wrote the book, I had decided, okay, Fatty's going to be kindness, loyalty, he's going to have gratitude. You know, gratitude's one of the skills that kids are lacking today. And then I said, okay, Pajasso, he's a leadership. He's going to be curiosity. He's going to be grit. You know, he finishes what he starts. He's on a mission. And then I'm like, Clyde, he's bravery. He's loyalty. He's got all these purpose. You know, he knows what he's going to do. He finishes it. He's got drive. So I went through and I assigned the character skills, all of them, to the characters, and then I assigned which character skill they'd have a weakness in. And then throughout the story, through action, the characters are realizing, well, curiosity is important. You know, curiosity is what drives us to learn. Gratitude is what drives us to write that thank you card. You know, because for me, kids today, I don't know the last time that you received a thank you card. When I was a child, my mother would make me write a thank you card for everything. And I still today love getting a thank you card in the mail, and I send one for everything. So if at the end of this book, kids, you know, learn gratitude, because this is a skill just like zest and grit and social intelligence and purpose that is going to help them in their life. This is something that when they're an adult, when they're interviewing for their first job, that's going to help them stand out from other kids that don't understand it. Because when you finish that first job interview and you send a thank you card, I promise you that interviewer is going to remember you. You're going to stand out.
Well, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
You know, if you just spell everything right on your resume, you're going to stand out.
That's true. That's true. You don't add an LOL. Yeah. Yeah. Kids, I think, have gotten used to talking in abbreviations, right?
Right.
With emojis. So they can have entire conversations without even using a word. But when they do use words, it's LOL, SMH. And my husband and I have to look at, sometimes when we talk to the kids or text, he'll say, what does this mean? I'll say, shaking my head or rolling on the floor laughing.
So,
you know,
what are some of the top skills that they have found are lacking in kids?
So, zest, grit, social intelligence, purpose, zest, curiosity, gratitude. That's just to name a few, but those are the top ones that I really focus on in the book. And then we also dive into bravery, leadership, you know, the social intelligence is such a big one, because I think that kids aren't able to realize that when another kid is sitting alone at a table, that they don't want, you know, you want to go over and include them. Also, when you're sitting at a table, it's not acceptable to have your phone out and reading your phone while there's other people, you know, engage in the conversation, understand how to act in a social environment is so key to a child's future. I mean, this is really something that if they learn now is going to really help them. So all the traits, in fact, grit, zest, I mean, having that zest to go after something, grit, finishing what we start, these are such important things.
Does this organization feel like these are traits that kids in other generations had and the current generation is missing? Or is it just because I don't feel like kids today are that much different than, you know, like my grandkids seem that much different than my kids did or that I did growing up.
I think everything, you know, the world has changed. I'll take curiosity, for instance. So if you wanted to learn something, for my generation, we had to pick up a book and research it. You know, curiosity, in 2 seconds, you have the answer. You know, so it's kind of muting a child's drive to go out there and do that science project to find out, does hot water freeze faster than cold water? You know, the ability to have everything at our fingertips is kind of stifling kids, their urge to learn and find out for themselves. You know, the social intelligence, back in my day, I didn't have to worry about having my cell phone out at a table and being rude to the people around me. You know, empathy is such a hard skill to teach, because you have to ask a child to be able to learn how to put themselves in the shoes of another child. And this is an emotion that's really hard. And I truly believe that if somebody can teach a child this, and I'm hoping, you know, a lot of the characters in this book do this, you're able to imagine how that person feels sitting alone. Or you're able to imagine if that was you being called a redhead or ginger, if that was you being picked on and called out for something, how would you feel? And when you realize you wouldn't feel good, you might stop before you did it or laughed along with the person or didn't go and embrace the person or sit with them. So that's really a huge one. And I don't know if that was any different when I was a kid to now, but it's definitely something that I'm hoping to teach the kids, because I think it's easily one of the most important. And when I was younger, and I think I might speak for all of us, we didn't have social media. So when I got home from school, the bullying stopped.
Yeah.
Somebody wasn't calling me Hooters on Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram. So I didn't know if I wasn't invited to a party because I wasn't seeing the pictures all weekend long on my phone.
Right.
So I didn't realize that was excluded. So I think as the world changes, it's kids are finding that there's different ways to be hurt than when we were younger. And being home isn't that sanctuary that it used to be, because they're able to reach you in your house. You know, somebody once said to me, being on Facebook, you know, with politics and religion, and there being no restriction of what we discuss, because I grew up with, you didn't talk either of those things with friends or at dinner parties. Facebook is like somebody coming into your home and shouting out whatever their opinion is without any kind of fear or concern of how you feel about it. And it is so true. And, you know, I tend to not turn it on anymore. And it's not picking on Facebook. It's just when I'm at home, I want to be with my family in the moment, only talking about kind things and things that are uplifting and positive. You know, going, you know, opening up that door, so to speak, to all those emotions, it's got to be hard for a kid.
Oh, yeah. And another thing I realized that is very different today than when my kids were little or when I was little is that children have much less free time, much less ability to go out and wander the neighborhood, hang out with other kids, you know, and explore. They don't seem to have the opportunity to explore on their own at all.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's our culture, you know.
Yeah.
Stranger danger. It is. It really is. I wanted to point out something. The intelligent cat. Okay, so some of the things he says. For instance, he says to Fatty, "Fatty, you need to remember that everyone is born with some unique strength. You need to tell me what your ideas are about the booby traps that they set." And that's just one example of what he says. He's just trying to draw. He tries to draw the other characters out with their strengths. I think that's really, you know, that's really good. He's a very interesting cat. Very interesting cat.
He is, and I love that he has his own Kindle, and I love that he's able to read things and look things up, and he knows all these languages. And you know, if you've met him in person, it makes us laugh so hard. And I think when I first wrote the book and my girlfriend laughed and I laughed and my husband, it's because we knew the characters. And I said, but strangers aren't going to get that. If you saw Payaso, you know, he's silently correcting your grammar as you're talking. I mean, it's just, he's looking at you like he is thinking, wow, you're a nitwit, or I can't believe you just said that out loud. I mean, it's just his facial expression, really who he is. And when he yells out, you know, my favorite thing is when he yells out just random facts. And it's because to him, he's so proud of how smart he is. And he, you know, that's his strength. And I think he's insecure that when other characters become as intelligent as he is, they won't need him anymore.
Right.
So, you know,
and
really,
that's his fear, because Fatty is his, I think they're really soulmates in a way. And,
And in real life, I can't even tell you how adorable it was. And it's just so, I see him, he'll come over and he'll sit on Fatty's bed and just take in his smell, and he just loves him. It's incredible.
Oh gosh.
That really is surprising from a cat, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Cats are very interesting creatures.
Now, you're using this book as sort of a platform, to build a platform to promote kindness and anti-bullying. Can you describe some of the ways that you're doing that?
Sure. So I'm so excited to announce that we're launching the Kindness Challenge. And the Kindness Challenge is when we're asking children to go to the letsallbekind.com website. And they could download a Be a Kindness Advocate sign, and they could pick whatever character they identify with, Fatty or Payaso. And there, we ask them to take a look at all the examples that we give on the website of how to be kind and how to engage others in kindness, how to spread kindness. And then we're asking them to go out and do something kind for somebody. And it can be volunteering with your family. It can be reading to kids. It can be anything, even if it's you want to open up a lemonade stand and donate the money, or if you simply just want to, you know, sit with an elderly person and ask them questions and engage in conversation. There's so many ways that you could be kind to somebody. And we're asking them to then not only do the act of kindness, but then take a picture with the I'm a Kindness Advocate sign, and then go online and share it on Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram with the hashtag Let's All Be Kind. And at the end, we're hoping to have, I'm hoping Cardinal Dolan, I'm going to ask him if he will go through all the kindness stories and select the kindness story, and we're going to give the kids a prize and, you know, $1,000 to their favorite charity and some school stuff and also some fun theme park tickets. So we're really hoping that, we're hoping to engage them to really go out of their way to remember to be kind. And what gave me this idea, Kindness Counts is a charity out of Canada, and they did an experiment where they asked kids to do 3 acts of kindness a day for 30 days. And at the end of 30 days, they had the kids come back and they asked them what they thought. And the kids not only said that they ended up doing more than 3 acts of kindness a day, that when the 30 days was up, they're still doing the 3 acts of kindness a day. They loved it so much that the emotion they got from doing the act of kindness was better than receiving a gift. So, So I was so moved when I read that, and I thought, you know, if kids could turn to social media to be inspiring other kids to do something kind, maybe that'll stop the kids from going to social media to bully or, you know, post things that aren't really, you know, social media worthy. So let's get the kids on social media for something positive.
Do you have a press release that listeners can maybe put in their local paper about the Kindness Challenge?
We do. We have what's called the Kindness Times, and it's also on the website, and they could download it. And the Kindness Times is a funny little newspaper-looking paperwork, and it breaks down all the different ways that, you know, examples of kindness. And I have to tell you a very funny thing that just happened on an interview last week on TV. I had been, you know, engaging kids to go out and be kind, yada, 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 and I used the word stranger. So when my husband and I watched over the video when I got home, he said, you know, you just essentially told kids to go out and embrace strangers. I'm like, I know, it came out wrong. So I want to make sure I'm clear. I'm not asking kids to help the man in the panel van with a puppy. I just want kids to, with their family or with another adult, do something kind or to another child, you know, go out of their way. And they could download the Kindness Times, and it talks about it. It also talks about if you want to do an example of grit, if you want to do an example of zest, those are great too, and share them. And at the, you know, the end of a few months, we haven't set the deadline yet, but when we announce it, we are going to pick the best kindness story and share it.
And what's the website?
Let'sallbekind.com.
All right. Well, that sounds like a fun challenge, and maybe some classrooms can get involved in it.
And I hope so. It would be great. I'm going to start touring schools next month, and that is what I'm going to be bringing to every school is the paperwork for them to actually take it home and do it on their own, so they don't even have to download it.
Get out there
and use the hashtag and get them going. And if you remember Flat Stanley, when I was a kid, everybody had Flat Stanley, and they would take them everywhere and take a picture with this paper called Flat Stanley, and it really was fun, and people loved it. So it's similar to Flat Stanley, except you're just out there doing something kind and telling people what you did.
Very good. Very good. Well, we're out of time. It was a great pleasure talking to you today, Marie. And Mom, do you have some final words for us?
Oh, yes, I do. Guess what? Mother Teresa of Calcutta said, there are 3 things in life that are important. The first is to be kind. The second is to be kind. And the third is to be kind.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored that you had me on today, and I really appreciate it.
Well, we loved having you. And see you all next week on Writer's Voices.